Netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney, you're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Hi, I'm John Montgomery, and thanks for downloading our podcast. We appreciate it. Before we get into the meat of it today, I just want to point out something that may be really obvious to some of you and not so obvious to others. At least I've run into a couple people this week who were surprised by the fact that we have an RSS feed on our site and what that is. It's basically a feed that you can subscribe to, either in a program, say, like NetNewsWire on the Macintosh or OSS Mail program. It lets you know when we've updated the site. So you've probably already done that for the iTunes podcast if you're getting this in iTunes and the podcasts get downloaded automatically to your computer. But similarly, in our RSS feed, if you subscribe to it, you'll be notified whenever we make a change on the site. And that change would include a new podcast that's been posted, a new feature story, which is our really heavily researched in-depth stories, or maybe it's a quick take as well. There are basically lighter stories, news about the site, maybe some articles that aren't quite as in-depth as the FX Guide feature stories that we do. For instance, a couple weeks ago, I posted a story that had benchmarks for the new HP Flame systems and so forth. But again, if you want to do that, there's basically an icon in the on the top of the page. Our RSS feed is actually www.fxguide.com/fxguide.rss. And it'll allow you to get automatically notified whenever we do an update or post something new on the site. So check that out. I know that's old news for a lot of you, but I've shown that to a few people this week and that was pretty cool. So anyway, our podcast this week is with Chris Sage, and his big title is VP of Operations at Luma Pictures, but he's also the lead environment artist there. And Luma Pictures is a really interesting story. They've done some really cool work on films. They actually did No Country for Old Men, works on Pirates of the Caribbean. But what we found interesting and why we actually approached them is they built their post-process in a Macintosh-centric environment, or Mac-centric environment, I guess it's called nowadays. And it's really cool since they're at root a shake house that made a lot of sense. And they do run a couple other tools, but for instance on Linux, but it's actually running on Mac hardware. So we find it really interesting. In the podcast, Jeff Huser actually interviews Chris, and they go over a lot of that stuff. A lot of the also in-house workflow tools and job tracking tools that they do, as well as some new software that they're coming out that they're going to make available to the public. So why don't we go ahead and join that interview? It's Jeff Huser speaking with Chris Sage.
Chris, welcome. Thanks for joining us here on the FX Podcast.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Thanks. Can you give us a little history of Luma Pictures?
Yeah, Luma is basically an artist-run company that was started about 7 years ago by a small group of guys who sort of wanted to explore their own way of doing visual effects in a less structured, a little bit more artist-friendly type of environment. And so we kind of grew out of that philosophy and try and focus on the artist, and we've built up from there over the last 7 years. We originally started with about 10 guys working mostly in doing some compositing, some 3D components, and now we've moved on to about 65 guys, and we do compositing, creature work, large-scale water effects, big set extensions, big entire environment creations, and stuff like that. The company was first started by Payam Shahadi and his partner, John Betwell, and they both were... John is a former director and actually is now getting back into directing. He did The Last Starfighter, and Payam started out as a character artist, modeling characters as on a freelance basis, and they sort of came together to start Luma in the very beginning.
Can you tell people just some of the projects that they would know?
We've worked on Underworld, Underworld 2. We've recently finished work on Pirates of the Caribbean, No Country for Old Men. Others include The Human Stain, Crash. We worked on Ray as well. And currently we have about 5 projects in-house, varying in size.
I understand set extensions were set recreations, in fact, were one of the starting points of the company.
Well, basically, one of the first projects that we worked on was The Human Stain with Anthony Hopkins and Nicole Kidman. And what had happened was is that they were in the final stages of their cut, and they were preparing for the Academy Awards that year, and they had decided that in their edit they needed a sequence to sort of tie in some romantic aspects of the story. And so they decided that they wanted to try and reshoot Anthony Hopkins and Nicole Kidman dancing on the porch of one of the houses that they, Anthony Hopkins' house in the story. And so they had done some research to see if they could get the set. It was actually shot on location, and they determined that the set wasn't available, and they couldn't buy it pretty much at any price. So basically they came to us and said, if we shot them on green screen dancing, what can you do for us? And so we went through and looked at some of the material they had already shot, which included some of the porch from different angles, a little bit of information here and there, and basically used that to recreate the entire sequence. And it was a little over 1,000-frame sequence of a long pullback of Anthony Hopkins and Nicole Kidman dancing on the front porch, recreated from interior all the way to the wide exterior from scratch digitally. So.
Tell me about the pipeline. One of the things that attracted us to come to talk to you today was the boast that the pipeline's essentially Macintosh all the way through.
Right. We're predominantly Mac-based, and currently we, since we're doing a lot of heavy water simulation work, we're using RealFlow, and we're running Linux, but we're running Linux for that purpose on Mac hardware. We sort of started out as a shakehouse, and that was our original decision to move to the Mac platform from doing work on PCs was driven by Shake and the economy of rendering the free rendering option of Shake on the Mac as opposed to the expensive option on Linux and the PC and Windows-based. So basically, we moved that direction very early on, and then we found that the tool set that was available for management and for doing most of our 2D and 3D work was robust enough that we could build on it, and we built a pretty extensive pipeline around it, taking advantage as much as possible of the different Mac-type tools like AppleScript and using PHP and MySQL to create database-driven project management systems that rely on some of those core features that are found in the OS X operating system. And we've recently, since we've taken on Linux as part of our overall pipeline, we've moved towards redoing a lot of it in Python now, so we're now moving towards being platform agnostic. But we still really prefer the Mac hardware in terms of reliability, and now with the Intel processors, the speed is definitely on par with what our needs are.
Yeah, it's I see a lot of facilities, and it's interesting to walk into a machine room. I'm so used to seeing the blades floor to ceiling of Linux boxes, and to see the blades of various generations of Macs, it's, blades. It's interesting.
Right.
Tell me about your in-house tools. I know you've developed your own. On your website, you list some tools that are coming, but also just job management, how you handle job flow, because that's so important on these big projects.
Well, we went through some difficult projects early on, as most companies do, where you know you're hiring a lot of new artists, and new artists are coming into the pipeline, and there's a lot of mistakes that are made when things are done by hand, and it becomes very difficult to manage it as the shot counts get, you know, up to the hundreds. It becomes a bigger management issue. And so we basically went through a period where we said that enough is enough, and we're going to create our own tools for managing projects. We looked at a number of options like Alien Brain and some other tools that were out there, but basically, we felt like we were going to be shoehorned into a solution if we went that direction. So we decided to start from scratch and sort of build a pipeline the way, and management tools for the pipeline the way we would work as artists. And the artists had a lot of opportunities to contribute their ideas on how the workflow should go, and we sort of designed the whole pipeline around the artists first, as opposed to looking at it from a pure producer perspective and a project management perspective. So integrated in with the necessary tools for the producers are tools for the artists to be able to self-manage themselves. So we don't have a lot of situations where producers are walking around breathing down your neck while you're working, and which I know is appropriate in some cases, but we tend to allow the artists to self-manage a little better, and we've provided the tools for them to do that. The heart of our project management system is a thing we like to call Big Brother. And Big Brother, basically, as the name suggests, is sort of the all-seeing eye. It tracks everything from who's rendering what, who exported what asset, who's working on what part or what element of a particular shot, from lighting to compositing to asset creation, what the version structures are, what the schedules are for the projects, even down to how much disk space is being used by any particular show. It's all controlled through one main interface that's really easy to navigate, and artists have the ability to access much of that information as well, so it allows them to really get in and plan effectively to see when the next part of what they're working on is going to be completed and be notified when it is completed, so that they can pick up work immediately, as opposed to somebody, you know, sitting on something that's finished and nobody knows about it. So that's it's helped quite a bit in allowing them to self-manage. And our entire pipeline, from Shake down to Maya and Mental Ray and RealFlow as well, is integrated into the system through the use of MySQL. Our interface to Maya is driven by the information contained in the database, the MySQL database. And so as assets are created, as elements are published from tracked cameras to match move geometry, that information goes into Big Brother, and then Big Brother in turn populates the interface for the different artists. Every artist and every task type has a slightly different interface that's delivered to them in Maya, and different options as far as Mental Ray goes. Our Shake compositing pipeline is also scripted as well to take advantage of information. Many times basic shot composites are created by Maya through Shake on render time, so the compositors get a basic scene file that represents how the shot should be composited. The compositing methods are controlled by templates that are created by lead artists, and so they basically get a real head start when it comes to beginning a comp for the first time. The Maya interface components, we handle all version control through the interface, and that's driven by the database as well. For instance, when you are making a new scene, all the correct versions of each asset are delivered to your scene, as opposed to you having to go look for them. When a lighter builds a scene from scratch, they just indicate what shot it's for, and the database delivers information back to Maya telling it which assets to load for that shot, which animation curves to load for that shot, what cameras to load for that shot, and which texture objects or shaders to load for that shot. And the scene's sort of created automatically. So the lighters can spend more time lighting as opposed to setting up scenes and managing data. When they do their rendering, we use a tool which is actually going to be released on our website called the Nexus. It's a Mental Ray shader, and the best way to describe it is sort of a Swiss Army knife type of shader. It incorporates all the characteristics of the basic Maya shader platforms, from blend to Phong to subsurface information, ambient occlusion information, all in one shader. So basically what you get is a single point where you don't have to do a lot of complicated hookups to get things like ambient occlusion to work, other information like subsurface. It's all controlled through one single shader attribute editor. And in addition to controlling all those parameters in one shader, we also allow for the addition of an unlimited number of auxiliary passes. Those would be various mats or control passes, noises, breakups, other elements, including, you know, like projected matte painting components, those kinds of things. And those are all output separately at render time. As when a lighter then uses a scene that was set up with Nexus shaders to submit a job to our render farm, the render scripts do all the work of creating the correct folder structure for all the elements to reside in. Folders are created for each component in the multi-pass rendering system. You get ambient as a separate pass, color as a separate pass, diffuse information as a separate pass, spec and reflection, as well as your auxiliary passes are all created in different subfolders. And then that information is then pre-comped into a comp, like I mentioned before, based on certain templates that are created by lead compositors, and that's delivered to the final compositor for them to work with. But the way that things like diffuse and spec are generated as well, we give the artist the ability to generate individual diffuse passes per light or per light group. So an artist can go through and say they're working on a large set and there's a particular lighting arrangement in a section underneath some scaffolding. They can group those together and the Nexus shader will then consider those diffuse calculations as part of the same image, and it will render those out separately as groups. You can also say to do it on an individual light basis. Same applies for spec control. So you get a lot of control in comp over being able to dial in color and intensity of various light sources. This is also one of the other aspects that we have that integrates into this is what we call sample compositing. And it's another tool that we've created for MentalRay and Maya that basically integrates basic compositing functions from Shake inside of the Maya interface. So in terms of shader creation and shader setup, as an artist, you have all the same kind of basic compositing modes and compositing nodes that you would have in the Shake interface, like adds and multiplies and various color correction tools, and they function the same way that Shake functions in terms of the mathematics involved. So you can take relatively simple textures and create very complex shader networks using overs and switch mats and all that, all those kinds of things that compositors use right inside of the HyperShade interface. So you can create very complex textures from very simple sources. And that's sort of a general overview of the whole pipeline there.
That's great. Job management tools are just so important to facilities. It just makes or breaks the ability to handle projects.
Mm-hmm.
And you were saying all the deliverables to the client, everything is tracked through there, everything.
Right. Every time something's rendered, it shows up in the database. And as an artist, you also, every time there's feedback from the client about a particular shot, that information's entered into the database. So you don't have to wait for a producer or somebody to come by your desk and give you verbal notes. Many times you're seeing the direct email notes, or in some cases there are FileMaker databases that we share back and forth. We sync with our clients, and they write notes on their end, and then that gets synced to our end through different syncing scripts that we've written. So the artists really get the information firsthand as opposed to secondhand.
So obviously, as a Mac-based house primarily, Shake has got to be a pretty big component, and obviously that product is gone. Have you looked at other tools now? Are you starting to think about migrating from Shake?
Yeah, it's definitely something that's been on our radar for some time. I mean, for the most part, the basic compositing functions that Shake had in its latest or its last release are enough for the moment to get through, because we've always been very multi-pass oriented. So we're missing in that regard some 3D components in the compositing and some 3D manipulation tools. Shake's never been really that good at those things anyway, but basically, as we move forward, we're considering things like Nuke. We've also talked about Toxic. And basically what we're looking for is things that can integrate into our database and that are extremely scriptable, because most of our pipeline is really based around that.
Have you had a lot of help from Apple in terms of, you obviously have a big installation for them. Have they been helpful at all with this?
Oh, yeah. Apple's always been really helpful for us, not just in terms of getting us the hardware that we need, but also helping us work through particular situations and challenges that come up. One of the things that they've helped out with a lot is, I mentioned before that we now are mixed platform, and we run a bit of Linux, and we also run OS X. But they were very helpful in getting Linux able to run on our Mac workstations, and we definitely that's definitely helped out quite a bit. They've also helped us work through a number of different issues in regards to storage and working with the Xsan group. We use Xsan for our nearline storage, and getting those types of things installed, as well as helping us to do a lot of general planning. Their systems, their pre-sale systems engineers are really great.
A lot of data gets generated in a facility like this in a given week, so you obviously have to have lots of storage. Mm-hmm. Well, you were telling me about some of the systems you were using for that.
Right. For our main storage platform, we use an Isilon clustered storage system, and it's a little over 20 terabytes at the moment, and the Isilon clustered storage system is really a very efficient way for us to work. It's very low maintenance overhead. It's got phone home capabilities where Isilon generally knows about problems that we're having with our system hardware-wise before we do, and they will send out preemptive replacement parts, whether it's a new hard drive, whether it's a new power supply, and it's worked very well. In terms of maintenance and adding additional storage, it's extremely easy. You just plug a machine in, and there's a lot of auto recognition capabilities, and a new machine will add both storage and processing capabilities, as well as network throughput to your cluster, and it builds automatically. So you add it in, and it will basically take advantage of slow or low cycle time to move data around to the new cluster or the new node in the cluster in the background, so you never notice any kind of major rebuild loss or anything like that. And so far, we've had it for a little over a year, and we have had nearly 100% uptime on it, with the only real downtime being as a result of our choice as opposed to the system's choice. So
I want to talk to you about recent projects, but obviously high profile besides Pirates, mm-hmm. No Country for Old Men, you were the sole vendor on that, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. On No Country, there were close to 70 shots or so on that film. The type of work was more along the lines of things that they couldn't do on set. I mean, the Coen brothers are never really big visual effects-oriented type directors. The films they make, generally the visual effects are complementary, and that was kind of our position as well. We were supposed to be somewhat invisible in terms of the effects, but there was a number of shots in there that required us to make CG animals, CG planes, stuff like that. One big shot is the opening of the film is the antelope sequence, and basically the main character Llewellyn Moss is out hunting for antelopes, and basically we had to recreate a herd of antelopes moving and reacting to each other, and getting into reacting to the bullet shots and stuff like that from when he shoots one of them. In addition to that, we created a couple of other sequences where they had to show Anton Chigurh, the main character played by Javier Bardem, just sort of being cruel and shooting a random bird as he drove by. We recreated that as well. There were also a number of fairly complex compositing shots. There is a bit of it that was also done to add to the overall impact of some of the gore and stuff like that, but we participated with them as the sole facility on the project, and I'd say they're really amazing guys to work with. They really have a great vision of what they want and how to get it, so it was a lot of fun.
And what about now? What are you working on now?
Right now, we're working on five different projects, one of which is a film called City of Ember. And City of Ember, we're the primary vendor on that project as well. We're responsible for all of the major shots. If City of Ember is a book, and if you're not familiar with it, there's a story of it's a time when the sun has gone out, and the city life or life in general has retreated to subterranean type of environment, and they're sort of living off of this energy source that was created, or the mechanisms to refine it and to use it were created hundreds of years ago, and it's slowly failing, and so the city is dying, and there are these young kids who discover the way to revive the city, and we're responsible for the major set pieces.
You mentioned Primeval, and there's obviously a lot of character in there. Mm. You do a lot of character work.
It's all a series of events leading up to being considered for certain types of jobs. Starting out with the cave. The cave was our first foray into real creature type work, and we were given it as an opportunity to prove ourselves by Lakeshore as sort of way for them to consider us for doing Underworld 2, handling all the creatures in Underworld 2, because they were considering taking those to Boof and us, CFC, and a number of other places. So basically, you know, we kind of worked on Cave and tried to excel as much as possible with the time frame and the type of creature that they wanted. And that kind of translated into Underworld, where we got a little bit more complex creature-wise, dealing with multiple creatures, werewolves, humans, human hybrid, vampire, werewolf, human hybrids. There were, at one point, 12 different types of creature that could all morph back and forth in between one and another, and that's kind of where was the biggest springboard for us in terms of getting a seat at the table with some of the more higher profile projects, like Pirates and the like, and now with City of Ember and Nutcracker and some of the other films that we're working on. We've sort of moved from being just a sort of second thought compositing facility to one that's competing against Sony and ILM for particular jobs. And, you know, we also, like, we work with them as well. But, you know, in terms of the bidding and types of things like that, we're definitely at the table for a lot of projects because of those initial few.
So I think people should definitely go check out the website. I'll put a link to it in the story because there's a lot of breakdowns on there. I know a lot of the examples of the work on Pirates, for example, and some commercial work. And these tools you were talking about that are going to be offered, the mm-hmm. Nexus, mm-hmm. and a couple others.
Nexus sample compositing, and we also have one. There's one called PyMel, which is a Python wrapper for MEL scripts that is very, very useful tool to convert MEL scripts into Python format.
Cool. Well, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
I think that was really interesting, hearing kind of the stuff that they've got going on behind the scenes at Lumen Pictures, as well as actually some of the work that they've done on films. It's interesting that they've focused on the Mac. You hear a lot about places using Linux and open source stuff to standardize on. Don't hear as much about big facilities, big special effects facilities using the Mac and OS X tools. Really interesting. Not to mention the stuff that they're doing with MySQL and PHP. Actually, stuff that I use daily when administering the FX Guide and FX PhD websites. If you have any questions or comments or podcast ideas, drop us a line at podcast@fxguide.com. But that's it for this week. For my partners, Jeff Huser and Mike Seymour, I'm John Montgomery. We'll see you online.
Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by using the Contact Us links at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright 2008 FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide. Thank you.